good afternoon, good morning, good evening, and welcome to A Link to the Cast. Welcome back. We are the UK's premier video games podcast, and this is episode 12. Coming up this episode, we'll find out how God is taking on the world of video games. That's God. We'll also review Bioshock 2 on PS3. We'll look at Chime on the Xbox 360, and I'll finally get round to reviewing A Boy and His Blob on Wii. We're also going to talk about the BAFTA Game Award. We're going to be speaking to Johnny Minkley from Eurogamer about the BAFTA Game Award, and we'll be telling you how you can get involved as well. First, though, let's reignite our passions for the team, whatever that means. Here's Ricardo. Ricka is into all things PS3. How are you, mate?
Woo, it's getting hot in here. Reigniting our passions, eh? I don't know about that, but hey, we're all good to go. How have you all been doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Brian Shelf, Xbox 360 man.
Hello. You all right?
Yeah, very good, thank you. You?
Good. I was playing Bejeweled Blitz while I was waiting for my turn to speak. Apologies for that. What did you ask me?
I just said, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Hello. Thanks very much for asking.
Excellent.
I'm great.
So, yeah. Rick, you've been playing Bioshock 2. You're going to be reviewing that for us. And Chime on the Xbox 360. Is that downloadable only?
Yeah, it's the Xbox Live or Xbox Arcade or whatever you want to call it, the download stuff.
Excellent. It's good to have us all back together for episode 2 of 2010. So 2010 plus 12 equals 2022. No, that doesn't make sense. Basically, it's episode 12. I was trying to do some clever maths there, but it hasn't worked at all.
No.
Normally, this part of the show, I ask a question to find out a bit more about the team. Here's one for you, and sorry I'm just throwing it at you. Which film would make a terrible video game? So, you know, often films get the video game makeup, you know, whatever it is, Avatar it is at the moment. Alice in Wonderland's coming out very soon as well. But which film would make a really, really bad video game? Can I nominate one?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to nominate Panic Room, starring Jodie Foster. The first level's really great. You have somebody breaking into your house and you go and hide into the panic room, and then you basically then just sit there and watch people burglarizing your home and also torturing your husband and all that sort of stuff as well. I don't think that would make for a very good video game.
It also removes the dilemma of whether you play as a male or female character, because I don't know if you remember the kid in that. I spent about an hour trying to work out whether it was a boy or a girl.
And it was a boy, wasn't it?
No, it was a girl, I think.
Was
or
girl,
was it?
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was
I'm
a girl.
Sure.
Yeah,
girl,
yeah. Yeah.
Rick singing, I hope it was a girl.
Get out.
Well, I can nominate either a Ponsiarty one, which is Derek Jarman's Blue.
Oh, tell us one we know.
Yeah, well, I was just being... you could go for the obvious Schindler's List.
That's not where I wanted that to go. This is not where I wanted it to go at all. Ricardo, have you had a chance to think of one? I know,
yeah.
I've thrown it at you quite quickly.
No, you're right, you're right. Well, the girlfriend's determined to watch Serendipity, and I'm pretty sure that would be a rubbish game. So what, you leave a note in a book for somebody that you're meant to fall in love with, and then you got to wait around until they find that book in the millions of other books that are in New York. It'd just be like searching through relentless text. I suppose it could be a point-and-click adventure. Pretty rubbish one at that, though.
I think that will work on the DS, though. You could scroll through page after page after page.
I was going to say, it could be like playing Professor Layton. He just tapped everything trying to find all those little gold coins. It'd just carry on like that through pages and pages and endless screens of library books. Rubbish.
I'll tell you what would be quite an interesting experiment. Why not make a computer game out of a film that's been made out of a computer game? So Super Mario Brothers made about the film Super Mario Brothers, and then make a film of that game and just keep doing it.
Every iteration anyway.
Exactly.
It'd just be like pulp, just mess at the end of it.
Yeah.
Fighting your way through mush.
It'd be an interesting experiment.
And eventually it'd just become like white noise, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Sludge.
That was a good question, that, and some good answers. Thanks for that. We will do the news in a second, and there's plenty of stuff going on in the world of video games. But first, the headline competition is back. This is a true story. The headline competition works like this. If there was a story, if this story existed, which actually this story does, what would be a good headline that you would write and use in a tabloid newspaper? So if you're a tabloid newspaper headline writer and you were trying to think of something clever by means of grabbing people's attention, how would you sum up this story in a headline? It goes like this. Tighter official regulation of violent computer games was called for by members of the Church of England General Synod last night. In a brief debate, members queued up to condemn the availability of ultra-violent games and the relative lack of restrictions on what children can see. The church itself has been a victim. In 2007, images of the interior of Manchester Cathedral were used without permission in the violent game Resistance Fall of Man. The cathedral staff secured an apology, but not the withdrawal of the game from its worldwide market. So the General Synod of the Church of England is trying to encourage people to be, they want less kids to get hold of violent video games.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. And just for reference, the story that I've got this from, and this was a piece from the Guardian technology section, they use Mortal Kombat as an example. So good to see them up to date there in terms of the violent video games that are out there at the moment.
I suppose a more Christian game would be Immortal Kombat. Does that count?
Hang on a minute. I asked you to do this right at the end of the show. So you're going to have to think of a new one now. So think on in the future.
No problem.
Okay, one of the themes of the podcast, a link to the cast over the last few episodes, has been about Activision in particular, bringing out lots of titles such as DJ Hero, Guitar Hero, and of course we've talked about Lego Rock Band in the last episode. Beatles Rock Band was a big seller as well in 2009. There's an interesting statement has been made by Activision Publishing, and they're essentially saying that in terms of where they want to be in 2010, they're going to reduce the number to about half that of the titles that they are releasing in terms of music genre games, if you know what I'm saying here. So in the year 2009, they released X number of games. In 2010, they're going to release half that number of games because what? They're worried about the sheer number of games that are on the market at the moment. Is this the industry reflecting what I've been saying all along?
Yes.
So what they're what they're saying is that they had 20-odd games in 2009. In 2010, they're only planning to reduce to release about 10 of them. And they're saying that what they're going to do is have a smaller number of higher quality games instead. Now, I was saying that the market was too flooded with all these titles. Is this not the industry reacting to what I've been saying for a good long while?
I think the industry does pay very close attention to what you say.
I'm saying they're reflecting it. I'm not saying they're going off the back of what I've said. They're reflecting the point that I've been making.
No, I think it is. I think it's a fair point, but I don't know whether or not that. I think it's a sort of dangerous territory to get into. I think that it's a kind of a numbers game. It's like the world of film. You know, the reason there are so many poor films out there is because, you know, it takes. It's the rule of 10 by 10 by 10, isn't it? That every 10 pitches they get in, they commission 10 scripts. And so they commission one script. And out of every 10 of those one scripts, only one of them gets green-lighted. And then only one of those out of every 10 goes into production. And then at the end of it, only one out of every 10 films actually turns around to make a profit. And I think that's the same with games. You know, when it's a sort of creative industry like this, they have to throw a lot out there before anything's actually, you know, anything actually sticks. So are they just going to reduce the number of good games there are out there? Because, you know, sometimes projects have got so far down the line that people can't turn around and say, do you know, this game's rubbish, let's not release it. You know, it may as well get out there. And suddenly, you know, games that they weren't expecting to be huge, you know, suddenly turn out to be a smash. Mm.
Rick, do you agree with that?
Well, I think actually you raised a good point about this before, and you were talking about music games particularly, which is kind of the bread and butter of a lot of Activision's success over the last couple of years. And, you know, there's been a lot of pretty dubious, you know, Guitar Hero based games as well coming out. Guitar Hero 80s couldn't have sold particularly well. Everybody knows the 80s, you know, synth music generation, really. And then you've got a Guitar Hero Aerosmith or Rock, Metallica. That was a classic. I don't know anybody that's got any of those, either of those games.
Certainly not the Aerosmith one.
No, no, exactly. So, yeah, I think it makes sense to kind of look twice at your ideas before you actually commission them and go and send them out. And it's kind of natural in this kind of financial climate that we're still in.
Guitar Hero wouldn't be where it is now. The first couple of Guitar Heroes weren't massive smash sellers, and they weren't quick sellers. They were very slow burners. And, you know,
the danger Aerosmith's is... Aerosmith's going to make a comeback?
Well, no, not necessarily, but, I mean, look at how big Guitar Hero is as a franchise now.
Yeah.
I've not got a problem
with the idea of Guitar Hero being a massive franchise, and certainly Activision have made a bucket load out of it. I'm just saying that maybe they've churned too much out of it too quickly.
Oh yeah, no, but
grinding themselves down.
But would they have in the first place if they'd gone to them and say, hey, we've got an idea for a game and it involves actually quite heavy investment by you because we've got to make brand new hardware for people to use. We've got to make these controllers. You know, that's the first game that's going to get the chop. It's not the one that's yet another, space mutant, space marine first person shooter. They'll go, no, those always sell well. Hey, but, you know, on the flip side, look at DJ Hero. That's not sold particularly well and it's getting discounted everywhere when they might have thought that's going to be a surefire hit.
To be honest, that's been a bit of a surprise for me because like when I reviewed it, I did try and place an emphasis on the game itself being pretty good, but the implementation of it not being quite so great. Like, the interface is just so appallingly rubbish. It's quite frustrating to just get in and play. But once you're in there, it's a very good experience. The problem is the price point. And like you say, it's the first one in the franchise, so there's not many people out there with the turntables. And I've certainly noticed on the downloadable content for the game, I think there's only been one proper track pack been released for it, a David Guetta track pack. And of course, he was the biggest DJ of all last year, so it's hardly surprising that he had a track pack. But only one set of three songs? It's not been very great for them online either.
Okay, you're listening to A Link to the Cast. Still to come, we've got some reviews of Bioshock 2 on PS3, A Chime on Xbox 360, and also A Boy and His Blob, which I've been meaning to review for ages on Wii, so I'm finally going to get round to it. Guys, I just want to get a short response on a couple of stories, one related to PS3, one related to the 360. First of all, Rick, I'll aim this one at you. PS3 to get 3D firmware upgrade this summer. I don't know if you heard about this one. Apparently, the PS3 this summer will get a firmware upgrade, which means it will be able to support 3D games. Good thing, bad thing, you've only just got an LCD TV, so chances are you'll need to get a new TV anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I've still not really looked much into the response to the first broadcast of a live 3D sports event, which was, of course, Sky Sports broadcasting Man U v Arsenal a couple of weeks back. But I still don't buy into the 3D thing. I think anything that you're going to get firmware-wise for free is pretty cool anyway, as long as it works properly. But yeah, I'm not going to buy a 3D telly. I'm not going to buy a specific piece of HD 3D hardware to run these things on. And so soon after the HD thing, HD's not even picked up properly in this country yet anyway. There's not enough HD content on your Sky, your Virgin Medias yet. I can't really see the point in them paying that extra further for 3D as well.
Well, I think Sony are introducing their home cinema system that's all 3D related in the summer, so I presume this is all sort of piggybacked onto
It's probably more of a Sony lifestyle kind of thing, really, something that they can offer people with far too much money, really. You know, come here, you can have your full cinema experience, and you know what, it even does 3D as well. I think that's kind of a cool selling point, but I don't see it really picking up just yet.
Well, what you've done there is stumbled across the latest marketing term, which is the J curve, which is what everything is based on now, which is that there's always a load of early adopters, get it?
Yeah.
And then sales and usage plummets, and then hopefully it shoots up at the other side, making an attractive letter J on your graph paper. Everyone's doing it at the moment, but that's the problem, is that people have just got fatigue of new tech coming out. It's Blu-ray, then it's HD, and then it was LCD tellies, and now it's LED tellies that you've got to have.
OLEDs
and then,
as well.
Yeah.
OLEDs have got canned. I was reading that today.
Really?
Was it Toshiba or Panasonic have decided they're not going to do OLEDs anymore?
What, are they too thick or something? As in, physically, do they not make thin enough tellies? Because that was one of the big selling points, I thought, with the OLEDs. They can be flexible as well, I don't know.
They've given up on that, apparently. Brian, I'm going to move on to the next story because I want to get the quick line from you on this one. 2010 will be the biggest year for the Xbox 360 ever, apparently, because of Natal, because of Crackdown 2, Fable 3, Halo Reach, Natal, DLC for Modern Warfare 2, and Dead Rising 2 as well. Is it going to be the biggest ever year for the Xbox 360?
Who said it's going to be the biggest year ever? It's nonsense when any report like this comes out. It may well be.
It might. It's only the Xbox Group product manager, Steve Boehner.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, you know, they're bound to say that. They're never going to come out and say, this year we're going to just mildly underachieve on what we expected. But, you know, we'll all be happy with that. No one would say that. Wouldn't give shareholders confidence. And it's also, what do you measure it by? Because, you know, the relative cost of living goes up, the cost of earnings goes up, you know. This year, of course, there's extra VAT on everything. Do you count that in your total sales figures when that comes in on your marketing price? You know, it's in the same way that, you know, they say Avatar's the biggest selling film ever of all time. And it's like, Well, yeah, that's because it costs 12 quid to go and see it now. You know, still, if you do it in real terms, it's Gone with the Wind and stuff like that. So, you know, any story like this that's numbers, I couldn't care less. But there does sound to be a good lot of stuff coming out there, which is just a great boon for the gamers. But who cares whether it's the biggest year yet or not? As long as we get the games to play, great. Yeah.
I think it's maybe more indicative of actually Microsoft recognizing Sony's actually making ground right now. The PS3 is selling stronger than it ever has done, and it's got a lot of great exclusives coming out this year. And while Natal looks particularly sexy, from the list you just gave me there, I didn't hear anything else that I could really give a monkey's about. You know, we got Heavy Rain, we've got our own motion sensor things coming out as well, and there's rumours of another Modern Warfare 3, which should be out before the end of the year. They're already at work at it anyway. They're planning to make that like an annual franchise, much in the same vein as your FIFAs and the like. And I just don't see. I think right now is Sony's time to try and finally catch up, because like I said when we first started recording this cast, I think this year is when it's going to happen for Sony.
So hang on a minute. So you said that last year and you got it wrong. Is that what you said?
No, I said that in 12 months' time, Sony's going to be making more ground better than it has done before. It's going to be catching up.
It's making more ground better.
Well, it's going to be catching up better. Anyway, that's my point.
All I can say is typical PS3 fan.
Yeah, man.
Who's on the defensive?
I'm not on the defensive. I'm saying that your guys are on the defensive.
I said, who cares what he says? I hope it's a good year for gamers. And my console is brilliant.
Get out of here. All I'm saying is that I just don't know of any Xbox exclusives right now which would make me want to have an Xbox. Fable 3, maybe. Fable's been a brilliant franchise. But other than that, Halo ripoff Mark IV? I don't give a...
Okay, right, we're going to move on at that that stage. It sounded like I cut off a swear word there, but
it just naturally
happened. In a second, we're going to be speaking about the BAFTA Game Awards with Johnny Minkley from Eurogamer. But first, I just want to get... If you can just give us a one-word response to this story. It's Dead or Alive Paradise. It's available on the PSP. I don't know if you've read about this. Featuring the sexy female characters from the Dead or Alive series, your two-week vacation mode starts at the Getaway Resort, Newzak Island, where you select a favourite from 9 playable characters and you are free to mingle, flirt, play, take snapshots and challenge them in mini-games there's all sorts of stuff on here. Some of the features, social photographer, you're equipped with a camera to take around the island and take photos of anyone in sight, mini-games, beach volleyball, befriending, give gifts and grow a stronger bond with the other girls, bathing suits galore, choose your favourite from over 100 designs.
Have you got the quote from the American authorization board for the games? I can't remember what the official name is, but they had to obviously give it a certificate, this game.
Yeah.
And they published what their opinions on this game were, and it was something brilliantly worded. We're going to have to find it out.
Yeah, well, it's rated M officially is the rating for this, but my favourite bit is absolutely perfect. It's got something called Private Paradise Mode. Watch paradise flicks of girls on Newzak Island, some of whom may be wearing your favourite bathing suits.
What?
One word to sum up that one, Brian.
Sad.
Sad was the one I was going to go for. Rick?
I was going to go for ha.
I thought you were going to go...
That was my first word when you even started mentioning the story.
I would have preferred it if you'd gone sexy.
Get out of here.
Okay, you're listening to A Link to the Cast on your MP3 player, on your PC, and possibly even on your Mac. Well, last year, of course, was a big year in video gaming, with the gaming industry outselling film and cinema for the first time. We also saw the first ever video game premiere in Leicester Square, which was on a par with any Hollywood blockbuster. The Beatles, of course, got their own video game, and overall, gaming became a whole family activity. Well, to sort of commemorate and mark all that, the Game British Academy Video Game Awards are back. They're happening on the 19th of March and they're hosted by Dara O'Brien. He's the large Irish fella, I'm sure you know. The Game Award is one of the highlights of the evening and is the only award to be voted by the public. And we're going to tell you now on A Link to the Cast how you can get involved. You can do it via the website www.baftagameaward.com. That's www.baftagameaward.com. To talk me through some of the big games of 2009, we're joined by gaming expert and editor of one of Europe's most popular gaming websites, Eurogamer TV. It's Johnny Minkley. Johnny, welcome to A Link to the Cast.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thank you. 2009, it was an absolutely massive year for video games. I mean, where do we start in terms of the big games of 2009? You pretty much can't look any further than Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Absolutely. I mean, I really do believe 2009 was a vintage year for games across the board. I mean, a really strong variety. But as you point out, Modern Warfare 2 was head and shoulders the biggest game, the biggest entertainment launch ever. It raced past the $1 billion market. As you pointed out, it had its own Leicester Square premiere. It sold 3 million copies in the UK, and people are still playing it now.
Absolutely. If I just give a quick rundown of the games which are available that people can vote for: Assassin's Creed 2, Batman Arkham Asylum, The Beatles Rock Band, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, we've mentioned, FIFA 2010, GTA Chinatown Wars, which was a big title on DS, Zelda Spirit Tracks, also a DS title, Street Fighter 4, Uncharted 2, and Wii Sports Resort. I mean, which one for you would stand out of that pack as your outstanding game for 2010?
Well, I think, as we've mentioned, I would have thought Modern Warfare 2 probably the hot favourite. My personal favourites, I think, would be Uncharted 2, which just a remarkable, beautiful game and a really, really compelling adventure. But also Beatles Rock Band, because I'm a huge Beatles fan. I love the Rock Band series. I think the way they've worked with the surviving Beatles and the music of the band to create this incredible product, it's phenomenal. But what I would say is this is obviously about not industry people like me. It's about the public, and this is about the public's opportunity to make their vote count, because the BAFTAs, obviously all the other awards are sort of settled upon by people in rooms with furrowed brows, but this is the one award that people get to vote on themselves out in the public. So I'd say go to the website, as you said, BAFTAGameAward.com, take a look at the shortlist and make sure your vote counts.
I'm not saying dangers, but when you give the public the opportunity to pick their own games, you end up with titles like FIFA 2010. Now, if you look at, maybe if I pick a Wii title, which I'm playing big on at the moment, A Boy and His Blob, which is an outstanding game, which very few people have actually picked up and played. Games like that won't get nominated, yet, you know, these big franchise games will always appear. FIFA 2010, you know, is it that much different from FIFA 2009 or what will be FIFA 2011?
I think it's a fair point. What I would say, I mean, I think all of these games absolutely deserve their place in the shortlist on merit. They are all fantastic games, and they're all, you know, they are the most popular games, yes, but they are all individually brilliant games. FIFA 10, I think most people would argue that it's probably the greatest football game ever made. Yes, it might not be a revolutionary step forward from the year before, but it's a superb football game. Yes, some of the more niche games might miss out, but there's other categories in the BAFTA awards that they might get recognised in. But I think all of these games absolutely deserve to be part of it.
Yeah, and there is a glaring omission. Now, I'm not sure whether or not it's because of the certain dates that it works to, but New Super Mario Bros. Wii was one of the biggest selling games of the year, and that doesn't get a look in. Maybe something like Wii Sports Resort has done. You might question which one of those deserves to be there.
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, Wii Sports Resort, I mean, the children's BAFTAs, the public vote for the children's BAFTAs, that actually won the award. So for children voting for that, they actually voted Wii Sports Resort their favourite game of that particular period. I mean, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, you're right, is a massive game, an extremely good game. I mean, this list ultimately is decided upon by a panel from a very early on long list. Not everything can make it, and there are lots of arguments that go on, and ultimately, you know, you're never going to get complete agreement necessarily on this, and there will always be games that miss out. I say that was a good shout, but as I said before, I really do think every single one of these games is worthy to be in there and deserves to be on merit.
Absolutely. We're talking to Johnny Minkley, who's from Eurogamer TV. We're talking about the BAFTA Game Awards. You can get involved via BAFTAGameAward.com and vote for your pick of 2009. At the Oscars, they have the night before the Razzies. If there was sort of a worst game of 2009, what are the people who visit Eurogamer talking about in terms of games which have really let them down in 2009?
Oh, games that have really let them down. I mean, generally speaking, you look for games that just people sort of churn out to cash in and exploit. And I think a lot of games, increasingly these days, are the ones refer to them as shovelware.
Yeah, mainly available on DS, I've noticed.
DS and Wii, that is a great sort of dumping ground for these titles. They're the sort of titles that you won't necessarily see in the press because they're often not worth as covering, our readers aren't interested in them. But you walk into a shop and you'll see all of these, you know, terrible
carnival games and things,
you know,
like that.
Mini games that help you put your makeup on, all these sort of things. I mean, there is a market for them, I think, but they wouldn't be considered classic video games, so.
Absolutely. And if people are thinking of getting involved, where should they go? Give us that website again.
It's BAFTAGameAward.com, and also the awards are on Friday the 19th of March, and this year they're being streamed live, so once you've made your vote, you can actually see if your game wins by watching at the same website, BAFTAGameAward.com. They'll actually be broadcast live that evening.
And before you go, Johnny, we've been looking back a lot there. Let's look forward. Which are going to be the outstanding titles for 2010, which you think we'll be talking about this time next year?
I think 2010 actually is all about technology. It's all about motion control. We've had that for a couple of years now with Wii. PlayStation 3 is getting its own motion controller this year, and also Microsoft Xbox, they're getting something called Project Natal, which completely dispenses with the idea of a handheld controller completely, and the human body itself becomes the controller. But like all of these things, it's just technology unless you have a really, really great game. So it's the people that make the most fun and most exciting games, I think, that will have the most success.
Yeah, how important is it that Microsoft come up with a killer app for Project Natal? How important is it that they come out with something, you know, akin to Wii Sports, that really captures the public's imagination? Because really, they've got to use it to sell consoles, haven't they, at the end of the day?
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's completely vital that they have something. All it needs to be is one game that basically communicates exactly why you need Project Natal in your life. That's what Nintendo did brilliantly with Wii Sports. I mean, funnily enough, you could have, you know, if Nintendo had released that console with, say, Super Mario Galaxy, brilliant game, but it would have done all right. It simply would not have had the impact had it not come with Wii Sports. That was a game that, you know, was revolutionary in its own way, appealed to everyone. Everyone understood it immediately, and that's exactly the type of game that Microsoft needs.
And in terms of the hardware front, the Sony has talked about the PlayStation 3 having a 10-year lifespan, and just reading this morning that we are already talking about the development of their new console, which will have HD capabilities. Do you think we'll see any more hardware being announced, which is, you know, akin to the next generation of video games consoles?
Well, I think with Sony, no, the PlayStation 3, they'll absolutely be sticking with that for a few years. They'll look to expand it by things like motion control, exactly the same with Xbox. They're looking at Natal as a new platform. I think Wii, the Nintendo, are the company that do need to do something different, because, you know, now Wii's been out a few years, and their business model, they work on shorter cycles because they release consoles that, you know, cost less, the technology isn't advanced, so they need to update them more regularly. Personally, I fully expect them to announce an update to a Wii this year at some point, probably with high definition capabilities. I don't think that'll be the only thing it does. Not sure what else, but I would expect Nintendo of the three to announce a new console this year.
Great stuff, Johnny. Let's hope that this time next year we're talking about another great year for video games. 2009 has been an absolute cracker, you have to say.
It really has. Vintage year, but I've got high hopes for 2010 as well.
Brilliant stuff, Johnny. Always a pleasure. Great to speak to you on A Link to the Cast.
Thanks a lot. All the best.
Thanks there to Johnny Minkley, who joined us on A Link to the Cast. Brian and Rick, I'm just going to give you that list again. The nominations, you can actually go on the website, BAFTA Game Award, and vote on them. Assassin's Creed 2, Batman Arkham Asylum, The Beatles Rock Band, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, FIFA 10, GTA Chinatown Wars, Spirit Tracks, Street Fighter 4, Uncharted 2, and Wii Sports Resort. Your nomination for Game of the Year for 2009?
Modern Warfare 2, for me, has to be. Still playing it. Just phenomenal. Just a brilliant game. Simple as.
Sorry, dude. I was thinking of my puns. So can you just go through the list one more time? Which one would I pick out of that?
You would probably go for Assassin's Creed, Arkham Asylum, Rock Band, Modern Warfare, FIFA 10, Chinatown, Spirit Check, Street Fighter, Uncharted 2. I don't think you've played any of them.
No.
Oh, Batman you've
played.
Rock Band Beatles? That's not Game of the Year, though, is it?
Yeah.
Do you know, I'm a bit stuck there out of all of those. There's been none this year that's really flapped my flag. Batman's in there. Didn't enjoy it that much. I thought it was very much look but don't touch.
And it broke your Xbox.
And it broke my Xbox, yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe not a great year for games. I'm still playing Fallout 3, so...
Yeah, I'm still on New Super Mario Brothers to a large extent. I'm still getting all the gold coinage on there, but it's not there. I think that's because of the way it was released at the sort of start of November. I think they have a certain cutoff or whatever. I'm sure it'll appear next year anyway.
It'll be very interesting to see who wins it. After all, Modern Warfare got it last year. I don't think they can give it to Modern Warfare 2, really, this year. Uncharted 2's done phenomenally well over on the PS3, but, you know, Modern Warfare 2 is still the game that everyone's playing.
Absolutely. Let's do some reviews. Okay, we've got three reviews for you on the show today. We've got Bioshock 2 on the PlayStation 3, which Rick has been firing through. Chime on the Xbox 360, available via the Xbox Arcade. And I'm going to be talking about A Boy and His Blob, which I've been playing for a good few months now. And I notice it's selling really, really badly at the moment. And I can't for the life of me think why it's selling really badly when it's such a great game. And then I thought, you know what? It's because people who have podcasts aren't talking about it. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about it in the hope of beefing it up. I have actually been playing Reflex Edition, the Modern Warfare game on the Wii, but I'll talk about that at a later date. So I'll talk about the Boy and His Blob on the Wii. But first, Rick, let's talk about Bioshock 2, which is the sequel to one of the biggest selling games of the last decade.
That's right, yeah. So we're going back to Rapture, the fantastical 50s funland set 50 fathoms beneath the surface of the Atlantic Ocean. It's a world created by one man to try and give the population of that world whatever they want. It's their dreamscape. But ultimately, the freedoms gets abused and people start genetically modifying, giving themselves powers, and the whole thing kind of falls apart. And you've gone back into this broken civilization to try and find why you're even there. The game starts off amazingly well. It's got one of the best sort of intro pieces of gameplay that you'll ever experience, and it's just as perfectly polished as all of the cutscenes of the previous Bioshock, just as atmospheric and just as dark as you come to expect from Rapture. I don't want to give away too much in the way of the secrets here, but anyone who's played the first one will remember the guys who were called Big Daddies. They were walking around Rapture in their big eight diving suits. They had massive drill on their right arm, and they would usually fire a rail gun or something similar to that in their left. They were awesome adversaries. They were really, really difficult to take down, especially when you first started off and you hadn't got much in the old powers yourself. But this time around, you get to play as a Big Daddy. And of course, if you're that much harder, then the enemies are going to have been amped up as well. And up against you, instead of the Big Daddies, as well as the Big Daddies, in fact, you're going to come across the Big Sisters. Now, it all sounds a bit silly, but these Big Sisters have got superpowers as well. They're just as heavily armored and just as tough as you are, but they've got even more in the way of agility and abilities. They are truly phenomenal enemies to face. They're quite jarring, really. Against the rest of Rapture, when you're walking through and it's a very atmospheric and dark and gloomy and quite an intimidating place to be, and suddenly they just streak across the walls. It's almost got that edge about it that Dead Space had it. You know, it's very ominous, and then something would flash across and you wouldn't know what it was at first, and then it would show itself. It's very, very brilliantly put together game, not only in terms of the visuals, but the audio. It really sucks you in.
Can I ask a question at that stage?
Sure.
The story itself, is there enough justification for that story? It just seemed that, you know, you get, it's essentially the same sort of setup,
yeah,
but you're playing different characters who were in the first game. Is it just been sort of thrown together in that way? Or is there actually a measured story from the point of view of those new characters that you're taking on?
I'd say this was written with Bioshock 1, you know, at the same time. And they know what they're doing when they release these games. They're always looking for the franchise in the first place. I'd say it has been written that well. The story is that brilliantly put together that it doesn't seem like they've had to sort of mangle things together just to get a sequel out of it, no.
And let's hope there's some bits in that story that mean that you have to go there and collect that, because, you know, those are always the most important
get out of here.
Parts of stories in computer games.
Get out. No, well, I mean, there's always that kind of, you know, A to B and collect whatever the hell you want, you know. But it retains the same sort of semi-ethical dilemma as the first one, where you've got to choose whether or not to sacrifice the little sisters once you've found them, you've captured them and killed their big daddies, and, you know, harvest the genetic material which allows you to get bigger abilities, blah, blah, blah. It's got the same sort of twist on it, and the only new feature in that, really, is that if you want to if you want to free the girls, you can have them harvest Adam. I don't know if you guys have seen the little sisters harvesting Adam in the previous one. It's a bit ominous. You see them going around. They basically got to they've got this massive syringe, and they've got to inject it into the corpses of the fallen splicers around you and harvest this like red blood cells from them. It's a very grim, very dark and nasty sort of atmosphere that it makes, but you're a part of that. And of course, if you have the sisters harvest that Adam, you can then go on to kill them and take all the Adam that they've got. It's a grim thing, but you know, it's part of the game. It's part of the way that the world has been set up.
Well, the question is, Rick, what would make you stop playing this video game? What would make you stop playing Bioshock 2 on the PS3?
I was going to mention the multiplayer quickly as well. And basically they've just tagged in an online multiplayer into there. And I've said it before, I'm going to say it again, the thing that will make me stop playing BioShock here is going to be Modern Warfare 2. The problem being with BioShock, you take it online, it's not as quick, it's not as pretty, and it's certainly not as action-intensive as Modern Warfare 2. The objective modes in there, they're just not as well-polished, and it's inherently unfair as well. You start off when you go online with BioShock 2 with a pistol and a shotgun, and you get people who are like level 15, they've already got a rocket launcher and like a sniper-equipped crossbow, and it's just so heavily weighed against you when you go in there online. It's just not fair. So yeah, Modern Warfare 2. So a better gaming experience.
Rick, that's more than enough time for your review. You've really rabbited on there, it has to be said. But yeah, BioShock 2, what will make you stop playing it? Well, certainly Modern Warfare 2, it would seem. Brian Shelf playing on Chime on the Xbox 360. Give us a rating for it. Go on, tell us about the game.
Well, essentially, the game is, it's one of these games that sneaks up on you that it's incredibly simple, yet there's an incredible layer of complexity about it. To explain it in simple terms is it's like Tetris crossed with a Tenorian. And if you don't know what a Tenorian is, go and have a look online, or Little Boots uses one on stage. It's that weird square thing that you press buttons on.
With the fancy lights.
And it
lights.
Goes across with the fancy lights, yeah. So essentially, you've got a grid, you're putting shapes in it, and pieces of music playing. There's a bar going across, and when it hits the blocks that you've got in it, it sort of plays along with the music, and the more of the grid you fill, the more of the music plays. You're basically just building big quads, and that's essentially it, right? And it's about whatever 400 Xbox Live points is, or 450 points, something like that. So, you know, a few quid, about £3, and it's occupied vast quantities of my time. I genuinely can't stop playing it. It's one of those games as well that I don't know what the word is. It's kind of osmotic. Is that a word? Anyway, it gets into your brain via osmosis that when you stop playing it and you close your eyes, all you can do is think about different ways of fitting blocks together. It invades
Tetris.
Your sleep.
Yeah,
it's just like Tetris in that aspect. That's the great point about it. It's one of the pick-up-and-play games as well. You can play either for 3 minutes, 6 minutes, or 9 minutes. So, you know, you can kind of define your own time with it. It's one of these ones that you can just go on and on. It's got an online rating system as well, so you can tell how high you'll do it. I think I was 451st best in the world at one of the levels for a while, and then gradually you watch yourself drop down. Bad things about it, I suppose it's... another good thing about it is, by the way, most of the money from it, something like 60% of the profits they make from it goes to charity. So there you go.
Which
you
charity?
A combination, a few. There's Save the Children and something else. It's part of the One Big Game project, if you've ever heard of that. The only downsides are there's only 5 tracks, which, you know, when I'm now playing on Guitar Hero 5, I've got 140-odd tracks to choose from. 5 tracks feels a little bit limiting, and one of those is Moby. So essentially it's really only 4 tracks and one Ponzi loop scooping idiot that kind of ruins it for you slightly. But apart from that, can't recommend it enough. Chime, download it, it's brilliant.
What will make you stop playing it?
Peggle.
Well, I was going to say, has it done a Peggle? It seems to have just consumed you already, but Peggle's going to get you back.
Yeah, but you know how it is when you get a chunk of Xbox Live point, Xbox Marketplace points or whatever. Right. So I spent some on Chime, and then I was kind of just getting a little bit tired of it, so
extra
I just thought I'd never go on Peggle.
Extra
right. content for Peggle, Peggle yeah. Nights. So, you know, I've been playing that as well. So pretty much both of those.
Okay, that's the review of Chime on Xbox 360. Okay, well, the game I've been playing on the Nintendo Wii, and I've been playing it for about 2 months now. In fact, I've completed it, but I've never reviewed it. Brian Shelf, you're tutting there in the distance because...
Yeah, so when did you complete it exactly? So when could I have had my copy of this game back?
Not to lend it to it.
Yeah, you've been very busy with Chime, though. But basically, A Boy and His Blob, which people will remember from way, way, way back, but it's got a modern update, and it looks absolutely incredible. That's the first thing you notice about this game. It's done in a sort of cartoon style, sort of Japanese style, but very, I can't quite think of the word that I'm looking for, but it's really like warm. It's quite a warm style, and you really feel like you can really sort of appreciate the characters, almost like in a Winnie the Pooh style, almost like you would see as a kid growing up. So first thing you notice is that it looks absolutely incredible. I mean, some of the best visuals on Wii, certainly. You know, it's not realistic, but the look that they're going for, you know, it's all there. In terms of the gameplay, absolutely fantastic. What it does is you're a boy, you have a blob, there is a story, and I'm going to not even bother telling you about the story, but basically the blob lands on Earth, you have to go around and get it back to its country of Blobonia and save the world and all that sort of nonsense. And what you do, you have a selection of beans which you use selecting the nunchuck, and you can control the beans, and you throw beans for the blob eats beans and turns into different things. So he might turn into an anvil, which you can push off the edge of a cliff onto one of the baddies. He might turn into a ladder so that you can climb up onto a ledge. He might turn into a hole so that if you've got a boss coming towards you or a baddie coming towards you, you can throw the bean, the blob grabs the bean, and then the boss falls down the hole. Loads of different options. As I say, it works really, really well. Certainly the first sort of maybe 10 levels are really satisfying in terms of the gameplay. Maybe the problems develop later on in the game when it gets a little bit more complicated, when you get more options, such as you can have a rocket. He becomes a rocket and you zip really quickly across the screen. That's when it sort of loses its charm, because you lose an element of the control. And the control is absolutely vital for this game, because that's what sort of gives you the link between yourself and the blob. It also has a great feature. I've got to just mention this, otherwise I'll forget, where you can just press up on the D-pad and you just hug the blob for no other reason than to give the blob a little bit of a hug. And you give it a little noise. If you've got a girlfriend, she will absolutely love it for that one reason. The boss battles, by the way, are really, really difficult. The learning curve goes right up quite quickly. There's probably about 5 or 6 hours of really solid gameplay in there. And also, as you go through the levels, you can collect little treasure chests. And when you take them back to your little sort of hideouts, they turn into new levels, which you can go back and play as well. So if you're into sort of collecting and rewards and all that sort of stuff, there's a lot in there, certainly more than the 5 or 6 hours, which is pretty much the general game. Visually, absolutely outstanding. Gameplay starts off really well. Maybe towards the end gets a little bit too difficult to control. Maybe there's too many options available. There's probably about 12 different options you can throw in terms of the beans. There are some really ingenious moments on there, some really frustrating moments. There are occasions, for instance, where the blob will fall off a level and will take forever to come back, and you've got to shout for the blob, but you can be shouting for like what feels like about a minute before it actually reappears on the screen. So there are a couple of niggly moments in there. What I would say, though, is this is a game which hasn't sold at all, and probably for all the wrong reasons. The wrong reasons being there's not been enough of a push on it. And actually, if you compare it to any sort of games that should be in that same category, your Mario sort of New Super Mario Brother games, your Professor Layton's, you know, your Zelda DS titles, I would put it within that sort of group. In terms of the options, the playability, it's absolutely great. What would make me stop playing it? Probably still collecting gold coins on New Super Mario Brothers. So nah. If you're into that sort of game, I would recommend this, and I can't as well stress how highly I think visually it looks absolutely stunning.
Well, for me, it's similar in feel, although not quite exactly the same. But anyone who enjoyed Zack and Wiki, will probably enjoy it. It's that sort of puzzler.
Absolutely. So I would highly recommend it. Not enough people have been talking about it, so that's why I've been talking about it. I've also been playing, by the way, Call of Duty Modern Warfare Reflex Edition, which is the original Modern Warfare, but out on Wii about 2 years after it came out. But I'll talk about that later, so I feel like I'll always be a game behind. But anyway, we'll talk about that in the future. Okay, let's do the mailbag just before we get to the headline competition. Craig says, are you able to do a piece on pricing of games? For example, I went into a well-known game shop just before Christmas to price up iPet. It was £39, yet on a well-known online retail store, it was priced £17. That's £22 more expensive. When I pointed this out in the shop, the staff just shrugged and told me to buy it online then. Are you able to promote a favoured retail outlet for cast members? Well, I don't think we are actually able to promote a particular outlet, although I would say, if it is cheaper online, buy it online. Online don't have the same overheads and the cost that a retail shop would have. But what I would say is you can get great games, cheap games, second-hand games as well, on offer in, you know, your local high street as well. It's probably the best thing to do, and I don't know if you agree with me on this one, guys, is actually just try and find the best deal. Look online. If you can't find it online or you find a decent deal online, go into the store, see if you can get it on trade-in or on a second-hand or even on sale.
Tell you a top tip, I'm not promoting or picking it out over anyone else, but I've noticed from all your sort of high street people, at the moment, you seem to be getting the best trade-in price at Blockbuster, curiously enough. So, you know, that's
funny. I don't even look in Blockbuster really when I go.
No, curiously, they seem to be really pushing forwards on that. So no doubt that now when people start going in and they get more and more games, the prices start coming down. But that, you know, that tends to be the thing. Yeah. But you seem to be that seems to be quite good at the moment. Completely independent, because I think it's terrible for some other things.
Okay, well, that's the end of the podcast. We've just got time to sum up the headline competition, which was a genuine story, and we were asking the guys to come up with a real-life headline as it would appear in a tabloid newspaper. It went on along the lines of the General Synod, the Church of England General Synod, calling for tighter official regulation of violent video games. Members queued up to condemn the availability of ultra-violent games and the relative lack of restrictions on what children can see. So the General Synod, the Church of England's top bod, said, "Violent video games are terrible. Kids shouldn't be able to get hold of them." What would you say, Brian Shelf? What's your headline?
I've got two.
Go on.
The first one doesn't quite work, which is God and Warfare.
Oh, that was mine! God and Warfare!
Yeah, it doesn't quite work, though, because it's not Warfare. It should be God and Software, but then it doesn't work.
No, but they've declared war on violent video games.
My other one is Nintendo Deus.
Nintendo Deus. Nobody would understand that.
No.
Well, I can't help being too clever. Clear off, you thickies. Yeah.
Rick, what have you got?
Well, I think you could have a big picture of Freddy Krueger down the side, and you could have playing at the Church of England, and it's about playing games in the violent nature
What's
of
that got
Robert
to do
England.
With what? What's that got
yeah,
to do
Robert
with
England? Yeah, Robert England is a video nasty. And, all right,
video
other ones.
Games.
Yeah, I know. Well, you can Photoshop him in the controller or whatever, and then you got the Game of Strife. Oh, as if papers don't do that. And tell me,
the Game of Strife.
Game of Strife. That's a board
playing
game.
Games of Strife.
Absolutely,
I don't know.
Absolutely dreadful.
I think the God, England God, one could actually work.
God and
visually.
Warfare. I think that one will work. Do you want to know what the Guardian technology pages go for? They go for Anglican Church calls for tighter regulation of violent computer games. So that's what they went for. That's all we've got time for. Thanks for downloading A Link to the Cast episode 12. We will be back very soon with more reviews, including Modern Warfare Reflex Edition on Wii. And Rick and Brian will also have the latest fodder on PS3 and Xbox 360 as well. If you want to go to the website, www.alinktothecast.co.uk, you can download all the previous episodes as well. And you can also learn how you can follow us on Facebook and something called Twitter as well. It's shiny, it's new, it's 2010. Yeah, so do that. Link to thecast.co.uk. Great to speak to you. We'll be back very soon. Goodbye.
Hello. So normally there's an outtake at the end, just the one outtake, but there isn't really an outtake out of this lot, but strangely, when I've been listening back to it, the whole recording session was pervaded with a sort of low level filth and smut that doesn't normally exist. Just here's a collection of the filth and smut, with the filth and smut removed and just our own disgusted reactions to it. See if you can try and guess what filth and smut was being pervaded. Bye, enjoy.
So Rick and Brian, I want you to get my silk on this. It goes like this.
Please don't do that.
Well, Mick, where was your head at that point in time? So guys, get your old illness.
A minute. I asked you to do this right at the end of the show.
Sorry.
And already you're there just...
Oh, Mick! What? Honestly, concentrate, man.
What's going on there?
What's going on?
I'm just suggesting that if you were cooking... ...you're dealt out among the children. Hang on, no, that did sound really...
No,
ignore that bit.
Doing?
No, that did sound really...
Just go...
little noise. If you've got a girlfriend, she will absolutely love it for that one reason. The game...
Oh, my word. Carry on. See that Adam laughed at that as well.
Yeah, don't leave that in.
Of course I won't.